Now continue with the retreat that Father gave back in 1973. The devil's first effort against you is to kill you with your companions, to kill you spiritually. Mortal sin kills. The second instrument he uses is the television. The third instrument that he uses is school. That's right. I'm not talking about this school now. You happen to be in a very fine school. But all over the country, children your age are in bad schools. They have bad teachers, and they are being taught bad subjects, and they have bad companions, and they learn about sin very early. These little innocent girls and boys who are your age and even younger have no happiness. They are never happy. Oh, they have fun, thrills. Oh, they have pleasure, even if it's sinful. But they are never happy. For example, children, think of it. While you sit here, your father is coming home from work at noontime to have lunch, and he's in an automobile accident, and he's killed. Tomorrow morning, when you get up, you are going to the funeral parlor in the afternoon, and you know that you see your father for the first time. He won't speak to you now. He's dead. You know he's going to be in the casket. You are so unhappy, you cannot stop crying. But you must eat your breakfast, and you're crazy about bacon and eggs. Because your mother knows how upset you are, she's going to have bacon and eggs fixed for you just the way you like, because she wants to give you a little bit of comfort. Children, while you're eating the bacon and eggs, there are still some tears running down your face. You are not happy, are you? But oh, those bacon and eggs taste great, taste yummy. That's pleasure, children. The good food and the good taste, it's pleasant. You could have pleasure while you are unhappy. So you see, pleasure is not happiness, children. And thrills, well, on your way to the funeral parlor, the undertaker says, I must stop at a downtown building because I must go upstairs and get some legal papers from an attorney. And he says, little boy, would you like to come with me and ride on the elevator? You ride in the elevator, and the elevator goes up fast, and your stomach sinks, and it stops suddenly, and your stomach goes up, and you get a thrill. All the time, your tears are running down your face. See, thrills are not happiness, children. You can be very unhappy and have pleasure. You can be very unhappy and have thrills. But see, children, you are hungry for happiness. Only happiness for this world can prepare us to understand what must happiness be like in heaven. You were made to be happy with God forever. So the devil teaches children in this world lots of fun, lots of thrills, lots of activity, lots of pleasure. But for heaven's sake, don't ever be happy. So he teaches the things that will make you unhappy. He teaches you sin. He teaches you how to hate yourself. The devil teaches you how to be disgusted with yourself, that you can't bear to be alone. You see boys and girls who carry transistor radios next to their ear. They never turn it off. They don't want to think for 1 minute. They don't want to have a thought. They might think about themselves. They might understand, I'm beginning to decay. I'm beginning to rot. The children must be kept busy. Run, run, and run. Never have time. Always, always be under pressure. The devil teaches that. So he keeps children busy in school. They don't learn much, but they sure do a lot of things. They sure go a lot of places, but they don't learn much. But they do learn very well how to sin. They learn disgust for themselves and hatred for themselves. They cannot bear to live with themselves. So when the temptations come for drugs, for stealing, for the sake of the thrill, for the high-speed race at night, they go along. The devil is hoping that he's going to catch one of us someday in mortal sin, and we are going to die like Johnny did on the bicycle at the age of 12. Only he wants us to die with mortal sin. He is going to use the schools to teach us how to sin. He is going to take us away from God as soon as he can and as quickly as he can, forever. He wants to take us into mortal sin soon, but he's working for the day when he will take us into mortal sin and we will never come back. In the meantime, the guardian angel that I spoke to you about, they're right there, and they're waiting for you to give in and stop resisting them. They are waiting to teach you sanctity. I told you yesterday, I told you again today, about sanctity. God made you to be a princess in heaven, a prince in the court of heaven. In the court of heaven, the Queen of Angels and Saints is waiting for you, God's Most Blessed Mother. And in the court of heaven, Christ the King is waiting for you to be in the court. You must be in the royal family. You must be a princess or a prince. God made me that way, but the devil wants to make me so horribly deformed, so stinking with evil, so rotten with sin, that you will begin to putrefy in this world for a long time spiritually before finally he can bury you in the tomb of hell. That is the devil's big plan. The first thing that the devil says to the child that wants to be good is, aren't you sick and tired of being different from the other children? Aren't you sick and tired of putting up with your mother and father who are so pathetic, so old-fashioned, who are so out of touch, who are so mean that they won't even let me have fun? The devil puts that into your mind. He's a good teacher. Just listen to him once. You won't forget what he said. You might not think about it again for another 10 months, but when it comes back to you, oh, you will remember. Gosh, isn't it awful to have a mother like that? And you will say, yeah, I never thought about it, but all these other children, look at how they dress. Look at where they go. Look at what they do. My mother says, where are you going? Who are you going with? When are you coming home? Why are you going there? Who is going to be there when you get there? How did you spend that money that I gave you? On whom? Isn't it awful to have a mother like that? It's the devil talking to you. One day it dawns on you. Hey, all of these children, they've got money in their pocket. They go anywhere they want, and they never have this barrage when they come home. Boy, have I got it bad. The devil's a great teacher, and he is going to harvest, he hopes, mortal sin. Children, if anybody in the world, a priest, or if anybody in the world, a nun, if anybody in the world, a school teacher, if any grown-up, no matter how smart they are, no matter how rich they are, no matter how old they are, no matter how small they are, no matter how famous they are, if anyone tells you, don't trust your mother and father, understand this, that is the devil speaking and using a human being to say the words. You've heard the devil for the first time in your life when you hear that. When a child hears anybody saying, don't let your folks know about these things, don't trust your mother and father, when you hear that, you are hearing a human being speaking the words of the devil. Do you understand that? Never have anything to do with anybody who is trying to take you away from your mother and father. How do they take you away? Not in an automobile. They take you away by bad teaching. Your mothers and fathers are all upset about television because of all the impurity that is before your eyes, because of all the killing and beatings and torture that little innocent children see on television to horrify them. But the thing most terrible, children, about television, the thing most terrible about the magazines, the thing most terrible about the records that you listen to, and the thing most terrible about the movies that you see is the fact that you are being taught something that is wrong, and it looks to you like truth. You are being tried out, but it's glamorous, and it's interesting. and you never thought about it quite like this before, and you don't forget, because after you have seen this program on television, and then 3 months later you see one something like it, in the meantime, in class, hear about it, and then read something, and then you hear it on a record, and then you hear it again on a record. After a while, you think it's the truth, and it's the error. Children, if you commit a mortal sin and you go to confession and the priest forgives you, when you go out, you are a temple of the Holy Ghost. God is in your pure, holy soul, and He loves you very much. But if you have been taught error, if you have been taught, don't go to confession. Children your age cannot commit sins at all. God really does not give two hoots about this world. He doesn't know what is going on. God is not interested. When you have learned these errors, the day finally comes with, I don't have to go to confession. These are not sins. And the error, children, helps you to lose your faith more rapidly than mortal sin. Never listen to any human being on television. Never listen to anybody, no matter who they are, no matter how famous, no matter how smart they are. Never listen. Never listen. Say right away, Angel, help me. As soon as they start talking to you, say it over and over again. Angel, help me. As soon as they start telling you, children cannot commit sin. As soon as they tell you, never trust your mother and father. As soon as they tell you, if you don't get caught, it's not a sin. As soon as they tell you, get out of the house and stay out of the house and never tell them where you've been. Tell them a lie, but never let them know. As soon as you hear that, say, Angel, help me. Because those people telling you those things are speaking the words of the devil. Remember, I started to tell you about the boy who was on a bicycle and he was killed. I was in the sixth grade when he died, remember? When I told you about the boy who went down on the lake in a boat, and the next day they took him from the bottom of the lake where he had been all night. Just think of it, children. Suppose those two boys were in mortal sin. They've been with the devil ever since. That's a long time. Remember, he's so cruel and he's so mean. He's absolutely cruel. He's savage, children. Just think, if those two boys did not save their soul, they've been in hell, children. Now that is what God wants you to know, that he will die, that he will have the thorns pressed into his head, he will have six strong men beat him with a whip over and over, taking turns. They will hit him with all their might. They will pound nails into him, and they will let him hang from the nails. And they will spit on him, and they will let him roast in the sun. They will swear and curse at him. And Jesus will do it again. Jesus will do it again and again and again. Jesus will die over and over for you, like he does, children, in the holy sacrifice of the Mass every day. He will do it over and over again, if only he can have you in heaven. If only he can prove to you that there's nothing he won't do to get you to heaven. Love Jesus very much. Love him back. Remember, children, if ever a sin comes into your life, why should you be afraid to ask Jesus for mercy? Look what Jesus died from. He died from torture, to prove that there's nothing he won't do to bring you to the court of heaven. And what will the devil do in the meantime, you say? Oh, you're a rotten bum. You're going to go back to God and ask for mercy again? You, with all those terrible sins in your life, you'll go back to God again? The all-holy God, you filthy thing. And you decide, oh, what's the use? You don't go to confession. You don't go next month. You don't go 5 months from now. And you don't go next year. Who's winning the battle? God or the devil? Now, children, who's letting God lose? You. Who's letting the devil win? You. Why do you do it? Because time and time and time again, children, you do not listen to the angel, but you do listen to the bad angel. The two of them are with you all the time. So, children, today, forget everything that I said, if you wish, but remember this. Remember, remember, remember. Every day, whenever you need help, say, Angel, help me. Angel, we're going to have a test. Help me. Angel, I don't want to do my homework. Help me. Angel, I feel bad now about my mother. I'm beginning to sulk. Help me. Angel, my big brother is always teasing me, and I'm just so mad I could spit. Angel, help me. All day long, pray, Angel, help me. And many times in the day, pray, Angel of God, my guardian dear, to whom God's love commits me here, ever this day be at my side, to light and guard, to rule and guide. You all know the prayer. If you don't know it, you're old enough to read. Get a book and learn it. Learn it well, children, and pray it reverently. Get accustomed to the fact that there are two angels in my life, and they never leave me alone. The one is bad, and the other is good. One is a guardian, and the other is a damned angel who is working to damn me. You get all kinds of help from bad companions, from television, from movies, and how should I live? I should live like a boy or girl lived in the first days of the church. Do you know that in the first days of the church in Rome, everyone was pagan? A father could kill his son and could not be arrested if he got mad at the boy, because the father was the complete ruler of his home. The father could have a real big fight with the mother and say, okay, and sell her. That is what paganism is, children. Paganism is horror upon earth. Paganism is the worship of anybody or anything except God. Pagans worshipped cats, they did in Egypt. They worshipped crocodiles, they did in Egypt. In Germany, they worshipped the oak trees. In Persia, they worshipped the sun. In India, they worshipped devils. Pagans have no use for human beings. Only people who understand about God and Jesus have any use for human beings. The pagans were dreadful to their children. They might love their children, but as soon as the child aggravated the father or the mother, they could punish the child any way they wanted to. And because the mother and father were very often terrible sinners and depraved, they pained their children. They caused the children terrible pain. They branded them sometimes. If a boy ran away from home, his father said he'd never run again. And you branded him like you would brand a steer. That was the pagan world, children. How did boys and girls live then? Was there only a handful of Catholics in the city of Rome in the north, and a handful in the center of Rome, and a handful in the western part of Rome? How did boys and girls live then? They lived like heroes. The other boys and girls committed sins of impurity right in front of them. How did they dress? They dressed modestly. They stayed away from all the other local children. They played only with Catholic children. They prayed very much. When it was possible, they sneaked away down into the tombs underneath the earth, where a priest secretly had mass in the dead of night. And then those boys and girls, at the age of 7 and 17, one day they brought them into the open arena, and they let the lions and tigers out of the cages, and they said, deny Jesus Christ or be eaten alive. Quit on God or be eaten alive. Say terrible things against Jesus or be eaten alive. And they were only 7 or 17 years old. And yet those little children let the animals eat them. Now, children, that is what is ahead of you. Not the animals, but the dreadful world. You will not be able to have anything to do with any person that is your own age, except an occasional girl or boy. Now, that's ahead of you. Do you understand that, children? Then you, like St. Maximina, have got to be ready to suffer for Jesus rather than commit one sin. And there are not going to be many priests, children, in case you do commit sin, to offer Mass, to give you Holy Communion, to absolve your sins. So you have got to trust your mother and father, who are now trying to make you saints. Because if you are not very holy, children, in a very short time, then how are you going to save your souls? Because everyone else around you is going to be such a terrible sinner, and they are going to be cruel, and they are going to kill you. The pagan Roman children did that. They killed their companions because there was no such thing as murder being a sin. They did not believe that. So, children, you have to be very brave, and you cannot be brave without being very holy. And you cannot be holy without being taught by your mother and father how to be holy, without being taught by your angel, without praying to the Blessed Virgin Mary every single day, "Please make me a saint." You cannot be holy, children, without wanting to live with God forever. Remember, it is better to suffer, children, a pain in this world than to suffer pains in the next world. Because in this world, it is just a toothache. In this world, it's just a headache. In this world, it's just a stomach ache. In this world, it's just a slap. Then suffer it and offer it up to Jesus as a prayer, and He will make you a saint. Get accustomed to giving to Jesus all the inconveniences in the day. You're too hot. You don't feel good. You're terribly tired. But you still must stay up and do your homework. Get accustomed to offering up all of that, children, so that the day will come when you will be brave enough to be different from everybody in the whole school. Now, children, before you leave here, when we kneel down, you are to ask Jesus in the tabernacle, look right at him, and tell Jesus, "I so much want to be a saint. Please make me a saint." Kneel down, children, and pray that. Pray it silently. Look at the tabernacle. Look right at Jesus now and say it. "I so much want to be a saint. Please make me a saint." Now look at Jesus. He's in the tabernacle. This is He who was so terribly crucified. And tell Him now, tell Him, "Please make my father and mother and all my family saints." Pray it now, talking to Jesus silently. Now pray to Jesus silently. "Please, Jesus, teach me to love thy blessed mother." And Jesus is never alone. He's always with his blessed mother. Now pray to our Blessed Lady. "Please teach me to love Jesus above everything in the world." We have now come to the sixth talk that Father gave during this retreat in 1973. We live, my dear brethren, in a world that is dismaying for the older of the population, the older members. And for every congregation, there is a portion of the population that in that congregation that is along in years. These are the people who do not adjust, cannot adjust, and will not adjust, and of course may not adjust to what are called changes. Changes in the church, changes in the way of life, changes in the manner of one's dressing, behaving, vacationing, or dealing with young people. A very great mistake is made today by a multitude of people who are not old. That is a multitude of parents who allow their children to determine how the children are going to live, who allow their children to determine how the parents are going to live. Though it's hard to believe that adults could reduce themselves to such idiocy, they do. This nation is filled with mothers and fathers who go along. They go along with the children. How do they go along? Well, the children decide what subjects they're going to take in school. After all, it's your life. Isn't that what they tell you in school? It's up to you to decide what you like. It's up to you to decide what you're going to study. It's up to you to decide what you're going to do when you grow up. Parents that do that are very foolish. Do you allow a child to make a decision when the decision is bound to affect their whole life, and they make that decision against your better judgment? Parents do, in great numbers. Parents in great numbers are allowing their children the freedom of their home, which is to say, they can come and go without giving a reason, without giving an explanation for where they're going or when they will be back. There are parents, and their number is great, who allow their children to so influence the mothers and fathers, thinking that the children can actually say to the father, "Well, you're that way because you're prejudiced." They are not only disrespectful to their father, but they really believe that. There are parents who allow their children to influence them to such a degree that the children never give an accounting of how things go in school. They never give an accounting of their companionship or their entertainment. There are parents who actually do say it, and they mean it. Why intend? It is my mind. It's my purpose. I want it. I intend that my children be sophisticated. No, they're not mad. Those are the statements of someone who should be put away because they're a menace to their own children. There are actually mothers and fathers who say that and mean that. I want my children to be sophisticated. Well, if the parents weren't so ignorant, they would know that the word is Greek and that it used to mean wisdom, and today it means anything but wisdom. Today, it means an outward veneer, a gloss that is found on a hard surface. So, we have boys and girls who are brittle and hard and cold and deep in sin, but poised, sophisticated. There actually are parents who say that. That's the kind of world we live in. This is why your children must have companionship of like-minded children who come from like-minded parents, or they must go without companionship and play with just their brothers and sisters. Now, that's all there is to it. It's a very hard thing for a parent to cope with, but it is a most necessary thing because there are parents, first of all, who do not hold their children to any accounting. There are parents who want their children to be sophisticated. Sophisticated means, really, accustomed to sin and not easily shaken in the presence of sin. That's what it means today. A sophisticated boy or girl is someone who's just plain dirty in thought and in life. And parents say it, "I want my sons and daughters to be sophisticated." As I say, they're mad enough to be put away because they are a menace to their own children. There are parents who do not require of their children, "Where are you going? When will you be back? Who are your companions? Where are you spending this money? Why do you wish to go?" There are parents who are influenced by the children, and the children tell them what course of studies they will take and what school they're going to go to. There actually are parents who dress like their children. That means they dressed brazenly. They dressed shamefully. The difference between the child and the mother is the fact that the mother knows she's immodest, and the poor dumb child doesn't know it, or at least excuses herself by saying, "I don't know it." The mother doesn't make any excuse at all. She simply says, "It's the style." The father, who is old enough to have sons in the 20s, runs around with long hair and long sideburns. He has to dress in silks and satins, almost in effeminate attire, to show that he's one of the gang, he's up to date, he's progressive. If those are your neighbors, don't let your children play with their children. Don't give your children excuses. Just tell them flatly, now that's that. You are not playing with those children. Because you don't want to cry over your daughters and sons 1 year from now or 3 years from now. You don't want to cry hard and long, and you don't want to walk the floor saying, I really am guilty. It's my fault. That's the first instrument that the devil uses, the companion. The second instrument that the devil uses is, when children come to a certain age, they cringe, they quail, they cower before the thought of being different. There are in this nation boys and girls between the ages of 11 and 20 who are nothing but heroic. Heroic in their virtue, heroic in the way that day by day they put behind them the most disturbing experiences. That doesn't mean that they're not subject to battle fatigue. They resist the tide and the times. They are different. They are Catholic. They are not pagan. The multitude of swine, 500, went over the cliff down to the sea, gathering swine. After the possessed creatures had been freed of the devils by our blessed Savior, the devils went into the swine, and over the cliff they went. Not to be vulgar, the world today is filled with swine, people who live piggishly, for the devil has gone out and has entered into their souls. One and all, they are galloping down the slope, and they're all saying, we can't be different. We've got to go along. And they go along right over the cliff. It is terribly hard for your children to stand while the stampede is rushing all about them, brushing against them, battering them. Instead of oinks and grunts, they hear taunts and obscenities, terrible names and cruel laughter and sardistic jibs, sometimes vehement expostulations of rage. The boys and girls of today are heroic once they get to the age where they begin to grasp the horrors of sin. Still, they live virtuously. Now that takes heroism. That takes violence to self. The kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent beareth it away. Who are the violent? Your sons and daughters. That doesn't mean that from time to time they are not sorely tempted. That does not mean that from time to time they almost give in. That does not mean that from time to time they are not confused. That does not mean that from time to time they're not dismayed at the singularity of their lives in the presence of the multitudes of others who are galloping down the slope. So your children come home sometimes and tell you. Sometimes they tell you with tears, and sometimes they tell you with wrath. They cannot take it anymore. They want to give in, and they dare not be different. Once again, the parents must begin that long, hard effort to bring the children to sensibility and toward awareness that you live in a world that requires of you that you cannot go along on anything, on any occasion, for any reason. I used to teach in a seminary. I don't teach any longer. But in the seminary where I taught many years ago, in the late 50s, I told the seminarians what was coming, and I told them, I will be a severe teacher. I will work you hard and mark you hard. I will develop within you willpower and dedication and the capacity for hard work and suffering. I will try to give you spirituality. I will try to bring to your mind, to your consciousness. I am preparing for martyrdom. And if I do not die martyr priest, I am going to apostatize and go straight to hell. To the lowest level in hell, because I am not a human being who turned on Jesus Christ. I am one who has been called and truly is a priest of God, another Christ. When I became the Judas that abandons Jesus Christ and delivers him to his enemy, then the place in hell for me will be dreadful beyond what other mortals have as a place of torment. So I will work on you for this year and next year, and as long as I have you under my tutelage, I will try to convince you that martyrdom is ahead. Sanctity or apostasy. The church is going to crumble, and the nation is going to crumble. Those were years past, the late 50s and the early 60s, and it has happened. Now, mothers and fathers, tell your children the same thing. You have lived longer than they have. You know more than they know. You happen to love them to the point that you can really hurt them for the sake of helping them and loving them. You can cause them now to cry in disappointment and coercion, because they cannot have their way, and you will not let them have their way, because you are preparing them for what is coming. Girls and boys, what's coming? A world where you are going to be a traitor to Jesus Christ, or you are going to be a saint, but you're not going to be in between. All around you will be the galloping herd of swine. It will be so easy to gallop along. It will be terribly hard to simply stand and take the beating and the buffeting. Like St. Maximina, you may be tortured and you may die. The most terrible tortures, boys and girls, are not the tortures of the body. They're the tortures of the mind and the soul, but above all, the tortures of the soul. For the good boys and girls in this world, you are not tempted by the devil. You're tempted by tens of dozens of devils, and they're not tempting you to be impure. They're not tempting you to take drugs. Their first temptation is not to trust yourself. To have doubts that you have been following the correct course in life, to have doubts that you are on the right path, and to transfer those doubts to the cause of your being on the wrong path, my own mother and father. You will hear it again and again and again that you are to live your own life and you are to be sensible and you're not to be deprived of the best years of your life. The best years of your life when you might be free. What does freedom mean when you hear that expression? It means that you are therefore free without thought of sin to do anything that you wish, however sinful it may be. Whether it is to take heroin or whether it is to commit mortal sins of impurity repeatedly with different people. That is called freedom today. When all around you seem to be free, the devil does not tempt you to be like them. The devil just tempts you, his first step, to have doubts about the way you have been living. Here I am, 13 years old, or here I am, 15 years old. And I've not had the experiences of the other children, and they have so much fun. Remember what I told you this morning. Fun is not happiness. Pleasure is not happiness. Thrills are not happiness. The basic requirement for happiness is peace. To have peace in your mind and heart and soul. To know that you are in the state of grace. That's the first requirement for happiness. No girl or boy in your classroom or in your school who is in mortal sin is happy, however they might appear to be. They are the only people in this world, other than their angels, other than the demons, other than Our Lady, and other than the saints in heaven, and other than God, who knows how wretchedly unhappy are the young people of today. Now, children, you don't know it's true, because you've just lived a little while on earth, but the grown-ups that are here know it's true. One of the truly terrifying things that has taken place in the world today is the children have been robbed of their childhood. They have been given dust in place of diamonds. The adults see it in the faces of the young people. How rarely do you see a boy or girl in high school that looks like they have happiness. They have animated faces. They have grins. They have guffaws. They have loud hoots of laughter. They have squeals of laughter. They don't have happiness. They laugh a lot and make much noise, but when their faces are in repose, the corners of their mouths are turned down. There are lines of strain about the eyes. There is a furrow between the eyes. There is a tightness about the mouth and in the lines that later will appear in the middle years of their lives. There is a beginning now and a nervousness and a stress, an edginess, a tension that should never be in children. They have problems with their consciences. They despise themselves. They were made by a pure God to be pure. They were made by a God who loves them. They loathe the disgust of their lives. All the while, they're frightened by where they have been, where they presently are, and where they think they are going. Somehow or other, they cannot get out of the stampede. They have been not only taught sin at a very early age, not only been taught error upon error upon error, but they have been defrauded. They have lost the good years of their lives. They have been withered and dried, and they're seared and crisp like an oak leaf that fell in October, and it is now late December. It crackles like a potato chip. It is so dry. So are the children. All of the spirituality has dried and withered and is cracked. There's not much possibility that it will revive. While they may not consciously think about it, they are on their way to hell. You cannot let your boys and girls play with those kinds of children. You cannot let them dance. You cannot let them go to movies with them. They cannot bowl with them. They cannot date with them. They cannot have them into the house for the listening of records. They cannot have any converse with those companions. Who are they? Most of the children in the neighborhood. How do the children get that way? Principally because of the schools and other companions, and secondarily, but very importantly, because of their own parents. You have no idea, unless you have made an effort to find out, you have no idea how many whinnying jackasses are called parents. They're all over America. They're sending their children out of the home when they know that the movies are calculated to damn the child the first time the child goes. They are sending their children out of the home to dances which are as depraved as any of the dances in the days of the Emperor Nero. Parents are not ignorant, but they are jackasses. Stupidity is the nicest thing that can be said about them. They have become the devil's instruments for the killing of their own children's souls.